Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kick Fighting podcast show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are listening to the podcast in the most efficient way by entering Warman Kick Fighting Show into your iTunes search engine. So this is actually the second time I've recorded this show. Unfortunately for me, first version of it came out real, like, you know, the words got pushed together and it came out all warped. And just to let you guys know that, you know, I'm not sending you subliminal messages, so I had to do it all over and make sure it's a lot clearer and cleaner this time. Episode won't be long, just gonna go about 30 minutes, 35 minutes, and just give you guys some of those good old-fashioned results. Go ahead and jump into the action right away. First of all, great show, really entertaining show done by 1FC in their first outing into kickboxing. I thought the matchups were fine. I thought the crowd was all right. And I thought we got a little bit of everything. A little bit of everything that makes the sport entertaining and cool. I thought we saw it in the 1FC card. The show went down in the Philippines, and the four fighters that they used were... the four winners were, you know, veterans who've been in this game for a while who have names, and I thought that it was a really good start. So we'll go ahead and jump right into it. Regan Ersol goes against Brad Riddell, gets a victory by unanimous decision. First, let me give some love to Brad Riddell. I thought he showed a lot of talent. He's very, very good. I think he's got really fast hands. I thought that he threw in combo flow and bunches. I thought he brought a lot of effective offense. I just think that he wasn't able to sustain it. Regan Ersol, when he threw, he was throwing to kill. And he does a great job of, he'll go kick to hands, which in kickboxing, you see a little bit of everything, but more than most, you're going to see a guy who does hands to kicks, like that flow, because of the popularity of the Dutch kickboxing. But Regan Ersol's, you know, Dutch-based kickboxer, and he did a good job of showing you the other side of it. He can go kick to hands. He'll throw a low kick, body kick, or a high kick, and they'll fall right into his combo really, really strong. He's got really, really good turnover on his punches, and he fights very, very solid considering how wiry he is, but he is a really good kickboxer and understands his body really well. He was able to withstand Brad Riddell's combo flow and just look for his power shots in between. Rounds 2 and 3, Brad Riddell did not have the same offensive output that he had before. He would throw it, but the impact wasn't there, and the scores weren't landing as clean, and even though he was landing on the earmuffs a lot of times, he was at least making contact, and now later he wasn't making contact as much, whereas Regan Ersol started to build on the offensive success, started to really score some good solid combos. I thought that he did a good job with his step knee in space. He scored it down in the second round, and game, he was able to battle back and go the distance. I was really, really proud of Brad Riddell's work output, and I think that he's a guy to watch in future. It's been a while since there's been a, you know, outside of Victor Nagbe, there's not a lot of Australian/New Zealand, Oceania-based guys right now who are at a high level, with Israel Alexandria moving into mixed martial arts. Kickboxing's in need of that next guy. Now, they're still doing it. They're still doing the shows. They still have the Muay Thai fighters. But this guy in particular, or this athlete in particular, showed me something, that he could do it on a large scale and kickboxing moving down the road. So good stuff by Brad Riddell. Regan Ersol, everything you do with him is good. Really, really high-level fighter. I want to see him go against the best. You know, one day Glory, one day, he goes against the Infusion champ, Tayfun Askin. Whatever it is, I want to see more of Regan Ersol right now in his prime doing, you know, excellent work every day, every time out. Next fight on the card I want to talk about is Cosmo Alexander, or Alexandre. Also, I heard those are the three pronunciations I've gotten for him. Alexandre is my favorite. but Cosmo gets a victory over Elliot Compton. And I want to tell you guys something about, sometimes I'll spend the time to get a little bit more technical. So I'm going to explain something to you guys about how the effective way of giving up a round is, or giving up a position. I was watching boxing the other night, and Adrian Broner spent the first two rounds against Jesse Vargas almost throwing no punches. I think he threw less than 12 punches in the first two rounds. This is in a boxing match. And the reason why I bring that up, and the reason why that was, you know, amazing to me, or normal for me, is because in that 2 minutes, he does such a good job of figuring out, okay, this is your jab, this is the speed on it. Okay, I want to be sure of this. I'm just going to go ahead and let this thing come out. Where are you going to aim this? How am I going to block it? As soon as he gets the rhythm, as soon as he figures it out, all of a sudden in the next few rounds, he's scoring a lot more. A lot more effective. Really good, strong offense. And it all built off of taking a few rounds off to just figure out what the other person was going to do. Now, in kickboxing, we either get 3 rounds or 5 rounds. So we don't necessarily have all that time. But I want to show you what Cosmo Alexander does. Cosmo Alexander, who is a legend in this game, he has a history of waiting for moments to explode. So he'll get to really strong clinch spots if you watch in his prime and not throw a knee. He'll just see how you respond to it defensively, and then he'll use it for offense later. So if he notices that your guard is really strong to defend the knee, then he'll look for the elbow. Or if he notices that you're really focused on not getting cut, he'll throw the knee. But he won't do it right away. He'll wait for his moment. So he's always been known as this guy who is inactive and then fights in explosions, and then inactive and then fights in explosions. The most telling fight, the most Cosmo Alexander fight or Alessandre fight that you will ever see is when he fought in the fight with Yoetsen Clyde was an okay one. I'd say my favorite example of it would probably be his fight with Eugene Elkeboom in Australia. And Eugene Elkeboom is a guy who got the most out of his Muay Thai skill, more than any guy that I can ever come across and say, hey, how far did you go despite your athleticism? Eugene Elkeboom is probably right at the top. If there's a top five list of guys who are high-level guys as far as resume and what they did with their careers, there's like a list of guys who I would really say did so much despite not having the physical tools to be excellent. In that way, that's where I see and that's where I rank guys like Eugene Elkeboom. And Eugene is right at the top, workmanlike, bit down on the mouthpiece, kept going forward, kept throwing offense, didn't matter what came at him, just kept throwing, didn't throw the hardest punches, didn't throw the hardest knees, didn't throw the hardest kicks, but he was hardened to fight and he kept moving forward. In this fight, he's doing this to Cosmo Alexander, okay? So he's bringing this style and this workman right to Cosmo. Cosmo moves around, waits, looks like he's in a strong clinch position, doesn't throw a knee, waits. Then he explodes with a jumping knee and almost knocks Elkeboom out. And he does it again later in the fight. There are 2 rounds where he almost knocks Eugene Elkeboom out. And after he does it, he goes right back to being conservative and waiting and playing defense first. I laugh at it, but it's one of the things that makes Cosmo Cosmo. So in this fight, Elliot Compton comes out and he's aggressive. He's trying to throw offense. Elliot Compton, he's looking for a big win. He's been in the game for a while. The only thing he struggled to do is to get that big time W that marks himself as one of the elite fighters. Right now, he's got management that works really hard for him. You know, you guys know that I work for Glory Kickboxing and Matchmaking. I've gotten emails from his manager several times, really long emails, and they do their best to get this guy out there. He wants to win one of those opportunities. And this one, he came out throwing the offense. But then they got into the clinch. And when they got into the clinch, Cosmo did not explode into a knee. I thought he had the opportunity right away. Instead, he positioned his arms and he looked at Elliot and how Elliot's defense. Like how is he going to respond? How is he going to do defensively? What offense is he going to throw? How is he going to position himself? Is he going to protect himself for a dump? Is he going to, go fight my arms to try to get into the elbow game? How is he going to play this? He doesn't do anything for like 3 or 4 exchanges when he gets in there. Then finally, he starts to let the knee go a little bit. Round 2, he knows what he's going to do. He knows what Elliot Compton's going to do defensively, and he absolutely eats him up with knees. He scores a down in the clinch early. They come back for round 2. I believe it is a 1-2 switch knee, and then the knee scores big and he goes down. It was beautiful stuff by Cosmo Alexander. It really, really was. And I thought that the reason why this is important and the reason why I wanted to bring up this technique is he didn't necessarily give up all of round 1, but he took moments where he could have been offensive and he waited just to see what he was seeing defensive, like a defensive response. Now, a lot of people think you can't do that in kickboxing because of the 3 rounds. I mentioned Broner. Broner's got 12 rounds. He can give up 2 if you've got 12 rounds. But if you only got 3, can you really do something like that? And I say if you believe in your skill set, if you believe in your ability to score effective offense, do it. If you believe that if I get to this spot, I'm going to have offensive success and get my hand raised, you're going to be in good shape. That's how it's got to be. You've got to believe in that part of you. If you don't believe in that part of you, you're right. Start putting up numbers so that you don't get down in the cards. But if you are a believer in your skill set, I can't stress to you enough how important it is for you to let your hands go if you have to. But if you think you can set something up, if you think you can lure someone into it, if you think you're going to play with their, you know, check on how their defense responds to something, if you do what Cosmo did and see how Elliott plays the clinch and it leads to big offense in round two, do it. Don't not believe in yourself in those moments. We move on to another legend. As I mentioned before, Cosmo is a legend to me. You know, he's fought for every promotion in the world that I could possibly think of. And if he didn't fight for the promotion, he fought the fighters who were big in the promotion, like Cosmo's the man. But I go into the next fight, talking about legends. Nong Oh gets a victory over Fabio Pinca. The first 90 seconds of this fight is probably one of the coolest fights for the Muay Thai junkies that you're ever going to see. Just absolutely wonderful, wonderful stuff. And what I mean by that is, I mean, they just played the kick game so clean. And I remember one of the exchanges was Nong Oh threw a high kick, and Fabio Pinca slipped out of the way and then threw a double low kick. And then threw the first one score, and the second one he kind of went down. So the next time they came at each other, Nong Oh did a hip fake, picked up the body kick halfway, and then he got him to defend, and then he swept underneath. And then he did it again, and he did led to a kick. And Nong Oh just kept playing the game. Nong Oh, who the broadcast said hasn't fought since 2015, he's been at that elite MMA gym teaching Muay Thai and in the Philippines. And he goes out there and he just shows a legend skill immediately. Like, hasn't been in the game for a long time, goes right back out there and reminds everybody how great he used to be. You guys have heard me say it on the show before. Fabio Pinca is, in my personal opinion, the best ever, the best ever fighter from France. No offense, I really do mean this, no offense at all to Danny Bill, who I love, Jerome LeBanner, who I love, Fred Vallum, who I love, the all-time greats, even the guys who are, you know, Damien Almos and guys who are, like, building their resume now. I am not against those guys, and I still think that they are awesome guys. And, of course, you guys, Kamel Jamil, I mentioned some of the better guys all the time on this podcast. I still think those guys are great. But I prefer Fabio Pinca's resume over anybody. To shoot this fight was an example of how the greatest fighter in France history, a country that's got really good Muay Thai history and good Muay Thai background, still ain't messing with one of the better guys in the history of Thailand. Not even close. The skill level here was not close. And Nong Oh is not even a guy who I put in the, you know, top five all time in, you know, the history of Thailand. Like, he's good, but I wouldn't put him in top five, maybe not even top ten. He's a good veteran. You can call him legend if you want. He's really, really good. And he just had his way with Fabio Pinca. It blows you away how skilled those guys are. They are crazy skilled. So go ahead and Nango went on to win a clear decision. I thought that there were some moments where Fabio Pinca was really game. I thought round three came out steady with the low kicks, tried to go to the boxing. There was a moment where he tried to dump Nong Oh, and Nong Oh, just knowing the positioning, got himself low, kept his balance, and then reversed it, and then almost ended up dumping the other way around, or dumping Pinca. Pinca had game spots and kept fighting. It's just Nong Oh had an answer because he's an elite great, and there's nothing he ain't seen. So really good stuff by Nong Oh, who hasn't fought in a long time. We'll go to our last legend. I have three of these fighters are definitely legends. Georgia Petrosian gets a victory over Joe Nottawatt. And this story, and someone said it on Twitter, and I wanted to definitely quote them. I mentioned that it was the most dominant that I had seen Petrosian in a long time. The most offense that I think I've ever seen him throw. Ever. Like, he really let his hands go. He was really, really aggressive. And early in round one, he kept taking these sneaky head kicks. And the head kicks didn't get the shin up. They were the foot. So they're kind of the embarrassing ones. So it's like when you get teeped in the face. Teeped in the face doesn't usually knock a guy out. It can, but it doesn't usually knock him out. Most of the times, people just hit him. They're like, great, I got hit with that. He really, really showed a lot of aggression and threw a lot of combo flow. And after those scores, I mean, Petrosian, he just has the basics mastered. 3-2, straight two, 3-2s and 1-2s, pull counter, and defensive awareness and positioning. That's what makes him special. He is not throwing spinning stuff. He's not coming out there with a game you've never seen before. He's just so good at the simple, it just doesn't matter what your game is. And his understanding, his footwork, his positioning, he's an all-time great. And this is the most I'd ever seen him let offense go. Question moving forward for one championship, if you will, one championship heroes is what this was called, Heroes of Honor. The thing moving forward for them, of course, is how much can you guys do something that we can follow? And I'm about to start talking about the Kunlun card, but one thing that Kunlun's doing a better job of, and thanks to Kixie, shout out to Kixie on Twitter, they're doing a better job of giving me something that I can follow. They're giving me something that I can tell everybody about, something that I can say, all right, this is where the tournament is here. This is where the tournament is here. We need more of that. And that is the only thing that's lacking from what otherwise is a good start. So, and again, I'm not critical of them for the first one. First one, just get your show on the screen. Like, just get out there. Like, that's my first one. I'm not mad about that one at all. That's your first one is simply, what is the best version of your product? And put out athletes that people know. Go ahead, put on a show, just get it started, and then move from there. Like, I can't be mad at that one at all. There's no part of me that's like, man, they should have gave me a storyline in the first one. Like, I should have seen a tournament. No, just get the card out. But as we move forward and you guys do more cards, give us a map. Who's fighting for the title? Why are they fighting for the title? Who are these contenders? You know, why are they contenders? It can just be, this fighter was great K1 back in the day. This fighter was great Thailand back in the day. It's got to be, this is the storyline for what we're doing with our fighters and our promotion. That's how this thing goes. We move from the Philippines to China. We're actually in Beijing, and we're talking about Kunlun. I'm going to talk about some of the results, but one of the big things I'm going to talk about is their tournament. Their 70kg tournament produced two more fighters that move from the round of 32 forward. It's a good tournament. Thanks to Kixie, I've been able to keep up with it. It's going to be fun stuff, and there are a lot of results in this card that I want to mention. I'll do the ones that I didn't see. Liu Ji gets a victory over Albert Aratinen. Yuma Mitsui gets a victory over Bei Lashai. And then in the reserve, Zhu Boyatong gets a victory over Nakafumi Morita. That Morita guy I mentioned before, he's fought in the K1 tournaments a couple times. Japanese fighter, very steady. He loses to a stronger, more consistent Boyatong. Then we go into the tournament portion. Nomoyuki Nishikawa gets the victory over Wu Shusong. If I had predicted this one, I actually probably would have picked Wu Shusong to get the victory here. So good stuff here by a veteran Japanese fighter who's been in the game for a while. Nishikawa did good stuff. He moves on to the final, of this tournament. And the other bracket was Vlad Tuanov, who gets a victory over Yasin Beitar. Yasin Beitar, I mentioned him on the podcast many times, fought an infusion. Serviceable, middle-of-the-pack kickboxer. Not something super standout-ish, but very good, very serviceable. I'm a fan of his. And as a guy to be, I don't want to use the word gatekeeper, but if you beat him, you know that you are on your way. And I think Vlad Tuanov, who I've talked about many times at length on this podcast, is a solid kickboxing prospect to watch. He is not a Drago Gago level of kickboxing prospect. Like Drago, everyone knew. Drago went from novice class to A class in 1 year, had the aggression, had the style, had the walkout. It was more than just his ability to win. There was something about him as well. Vlad Tuanov is very, very talented, very good. Better than a Eban Deniz type guy. A Zeban Diaz type guy. Like he has that kind of basic skill set down to a art where he's just effective against everybody. Boxing clean, low kick game clean, boxing the low kick game when he uses it clean, knows how to use his defense and his movement to stay up on cards. Just really, really good stuff. I mean, I am a big time fan of what he does overall as an athlete. He's a good fighter. He's a good fighter. But not blow me away. here he comes. Like, I got to watch Georgia Petrosian emerge. So not like that, but I still think this kid is awesome. This kid is going to be a really good fighter. He gets a victory over Beitar here and then goes on to stop Nishikawa in the final. I mean, Nishikawa, again, I mentioned before, K-1 veteran, been doing it for a long time, but Vlad Tuanov, another level. Vlad will move on for that part of the bracket. The other part of the bracket, Mourad Titov gets a victory over Nayanesh Ayaman, gets a decision there. Milan Paulus gets a TKO stoppage over Zheng Dizhang. Milan Paulus, guy I've mentioned before, fought in China several times. He then moves on to go against Mourad Titov in the final, and Titov stops him, left hook to the body in the third round. TKO finish there. Good stuff from Mourad Titov. Most times when you guys hear me mention his name is because he's been stopped bad by elite guys. And I think off the top of my head, there's a stoppage. Bukau has stopped him in an elite fashion. But he is a good, solid kickboxer when he gets into his offensive flow. He just ran against guys who are better that night. But he's got a really good start into this tournament. He moves on, and I'm excited to see what happens with him down the road. Some other notable fights on this card. Gian Asai gets a victory over Silvia Lanada, or Lenote. Silvia is someone I've mentioned before. She's fought on a Glory undercard in the past. Good, serviceable, very small weight fighter. I think she fights around 110 pounds, between 110 and 120. So definitely good, someone to pay attention to. Just a talent, I'm curious to see what happens. Well, a talent that plays that gatekeeper-esque role, if you will. I won't say that she is necessarily a, gatekeeper to the stars and has to 100% be, you beat her, you've arrived. But I think she's a solid fighter who's had a lot of cool kickboxing opportunities and experiences. And in this particular situation, she is a girl who gave game effort against Gwana Soy, who is on her way, who showed some skill, who's good at kickboxing. I need to see more from her. Sylvia, a victory over Sylvia, just gets you started. There are more elite fighters out there, and we'll see what comes from it down the road. But definitely good stuff by Gwana Soy, and hopefully they build you. I can't have you fight now and then have you fight in December. There's got to be some consistency, and they got to tell me what the plan is with you. Other fights of note, Mirkan Bilalov gets a victory over Zhang Yong by knockout in the first round. And then the best fighter in China, the best Chinese fighter, I should say, Lin Qingbang gets a victory over Vladimir Litkin. Lin's got it all. He's a top five fighter in the world. The only thing I would like to see from him is I want to see him fight international opposition outside of China. I mentioned it before. I'm a big fan of Pisaki Nori. And one of my favorite things, he's one of my kids because I followed him forever. He's a kid who I've watched from the very, very beginning. And, I'm talking headgear and shin guard. So I've been watching him since he was like 14, 15 years old. So I've watched this guy for a long time, but he could stay in Japan and never leave Japan. And then he puts himself out there and goes over to France and fights. That goes a long way for me. Fought twice. Went 1-1, had a victory, and then he had the loss to Asbiri. It means something that you do that, because it means that you've got to put yourself at risk of judges that don't know you, fan bases that aren't for you. We used to always talk about the Masato effect, how when you're fighting, sometimes the crowd just gets behind you in a certain way and everything's good. All your punches, they land every once in a while. And because the crowd responded in such a way, the judges are affected by the noise. Sometimes you got to put yourself at risk and put that out there. Sometimes it works against you. Bukau went to fight Albert Krauss in Amsterdam, and a fight that I thought he clearly won all three rounds of no question. They read the decision, and it goes for Albert Krauss, and it's one of the more awkward moments I've ever seen in kickboxing. Bukau, upset, leaves, clearly thinking that he's robbed. Albert Krauss, I don't know if he was trying to save the moment or what was going through his head. Like, the crowd's booing. Like, they can't even cheer. And he runs Bukau down, so he put his arm on him as they leave, and he, lifts his arm up. Like, hey, we're together. We're fighters, it's a good hard scrap. That's not what Bukau's face said. Bukau's face was like, don't touch me. You guys brought me out here. You robbed me. And it's scary, but sometimes you put yourself on the line when you do stuff like that. That is what Albert Krauss did when he went to Spain to fight Abraham Requeni. I thought that he clearly won all three rounds. Not even close. like, and some of the last rounds really, really dominant. Round three, very much in his favor. They read the scorecards, it goes for Abraham Requeney. Bogus. That should not have happened. Absolute trash. Shouldn't have happened. But Albert Krause put himself out there. He gave it a shot. He put himself on the line to see if he could do it. There is something to it. And sometimes you have that happen or you do that and it works your way. You go in there, you shut the whole crowd up, and it's happened several times. And Mon Barlow does it every year all the time. He goes over to she'll fight the best fighter in Canada. Then she'll go fight the best fighter in Lithuania. And she is building her resume as a great fighter, fighting on other girls' home turf. That means something to me. In kickboxing, that means something when you put yourself out there like that. So that's the next thing I want to see from Lin Qingbang, who's got every skill. And on everybody's list, at minimum, he's got to be in your top three. You know, for however you do your 65 kgs, however you put that list together, if he's not in your top three, your list is wrong. So definitely good stuff by him, and we'll see what happens as we, you know, we move forward and their tournament still doing good things. It's moving itself in such a way with Kun Loon that I can follow it, and then I can do a podcast and say, hey, this is what you want to watch. So keep paying attention to what Kun Loon's doing, keep listening to the podcast, and follow Kixi, of course, on Twitter, so you guys can get the rundown. Kixi Kaposa does a Grobaka Hitman does a good job of posting like little clips and videos. There's a lot of people out there, but follow these guys. Follow them on Twitter, and they will help you guys get your kickboxing fix. We'll go ahead and move into the kickboxing show, or the further into the War MK Fighting show, as we're going to Moscow, Russia. We're all over the place. ACB put together a show. I won't talk about all the show. I'm going to definitely talk about the top. Let's start off with Daniil Gavrilov as he gets a head kick KO over Gor Nazarian. And that head kick, let me tell you something, that thing was smooth. Like, it was really, really good. It was in the series of an exchange and a step back after the exchange. Just found the opening, good time score. I need to see more from Gavrilov. Very talented guy, but I need to see you when the opposition steps up. But this is a good fight, good KO. That KO's out there. I believe Grobaka Hitman's got it on his wall. Follow and make sure you see the good stuff that's going on out there. I'll move further up the card. Jabba Askarov gets a victory over Ergali Uburlatov. Uburlatov is a solid fighter whose role in here was just to give Askarov good rounds. Clearly, I think he wants to be his own fighter and have success, but man, it's uphill battle when you're thinking about Tsarenko. When you think about Askarov. Askarov's later in his life, not the fighter that he used to be. I'm going to talk about him a little bit later when I talk about the contender Asia. But from that show, he was able to, I would say, only John Wayne Parr did more with the exposure from that show on the international level. He went out there and fought all over the world. I went to, just showing how old I am and showing how veteran they are, I went to a kickboxing show in Italy, and the main event was Cosmo Alexander versus Jojo Petrosian. On that card, they had Jabba Askarov. I can't remember who he fought that night, but the crowd, only person who got a cheer as loud as Petrosian, or at least a little bit close, only person in the whole building was Jabba Askarov. That's how well-known this guy is. At this stage in his career, he's going to lose to the elite. If he went against Vlad Tuanov, I would say Tuanov's going to win. If he went against Anatoly Moiseev, I'd say Moiseev's going to win. You know, like, just, he's not there yet. His last big victory, it's kind of a marred victory, but when he beat Alim Nabiyev, or Nabiyev, whoever you talk to, when he got that victory, Nabiyev, it was in a tournament, and he was in the reserves. Nabiyev thought he was done, and then all of a sudden, he goes out there, leg injured, and fights anyway in the tournament. It was in that Legend kickboxing show. He goes out there and fights anyway, and he gets that stoppage. That Askarov low kick stoppage over Nabiyev was probably his last great win. He'll still get wins, but that was probably his last great win because of what Nabiyev is going to be. But Askarov is still going to throw heat with his hands. He's still going to chop big with the low kicks. Was in one of the funner fights that you're ever going to see when he went against Robin van Roosmalen. Just a fun, don't back down, why you love kickboxing bout. And, I mean, I'm just always excited for him and what he does. And glad that he got the victory here, even though he may not be the fighter that he once was. we move from there and we go to Alexander Cetrarenko's victory over Jonathan Oliveira. Jonathan Oliveira, Brazilian-based fighter, I think he has, in the way that I talked about Eugene Alcoboom, made the most of his career without being a super great athlete. I feel like in that same way, Jonathan Oliveira, in a similar way, made the most of his opportunities internationally to fight all over the place without necessarily having the best kickboxing skill set. Not particularly strong, not a particularly strong kicker, strong puncher, not particularly strong kickboxing to low kick game. Just nothing that stands out about himself. But he's fought tough against really, really good guys. And, you know, even in defeat, he'll get up and go back out after another opportunity. And here he is in another international spot and just making the most of everything. So he's getting the most out of his career no matter what. And sometimes that is your extent. Not everybody in this game is going to be Petrosian. Not everybody in this game is going to be Bukau. Not everybody in this game is going to be, you know, Peter Arts or, you know, Rembondowski, Badahari. Not all of the people who do this are going to be great, but it doesn't mean that there's no home for you in kickboxing. He's doing a great job of finding an international resume and fighting all over the place. As for Alexander Cetrarenko, one of the better fighters in the weight class in the world, despite the fact that his resume isn't what it used to be, and he's no longer fighting the great guys in K1 like he was before. But, you know, he had fought for the title, you know, went against in his prime at the top, really, really talented, Nicky Holtzkin, you know, finding his offense. I think he did a really good job in his moments. He just wasn't able to get that big victory. But he does have some really solid wins on his resume, and he's a really good fighter, and this is another good win. Now, what do they do from it? They've got to build him with something else. There's got to be something that adds to this win. Got to be a roadmap. Make him the champion. There's some good fights out there. Some good fights for him to be had outside of the Glory roster. Some guys who are in China. Some guys who are in Europe. There are some opportunities. So they just got to keep building on him. Pervez Abdullayev gets a victory over Islam Babychirov. TKO. I've mentioned Pervez before. I think he's talented, or Abdullayev. I think he's talented. I just need to see more of him against higher level opposition. So his time will come. Moving up the card, they're giving him more of a showcase at the place that they used him on this fight card. I'm excited to see what this career leads to. He's really, really good. Sutnay Rogova gets a victory over Jonathan Deniz. Jonathan Deniz is just a savvy veteran kickboxer who's down to fight anybody. Again, in the same way that I look at Oliveira, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a world beater or that you're one of the greats in the world if you get to fight for Glory or for K1. And Deniz had the opportunity to fight in it. Showtime had the opportunity to fight, you know, Rico Verheerven, some of the best guys. Like, he really did have some really good outings and some really good opportunities against high-level opposition. Just wasn't able to get his hand raised, and there's nothing wrong with that. Rogova, also, I believe he fought in, I can't remember what Glory event there was, but he's a veteran guy out there who's fighting to be consistent. He's a good prize fighter, good heavyweight. We'll see where his tools lead him. I think he's okay right now. Do I see the skill set that's going to help him beat a Badahari or a Rico Verheerven? Not right now, but it doesn't mean that there's some high-level guys that he won't be able to beat. So, good stuff for Rogova. He moves forward. Artem Levin gets a victory over Igor Baginko. Both of these guys fought in Glory back in the day. Igor Baginko fought bigger, fought light heavyweight, and you know, took the weight down. And he's a talented guy. I'm a big fan of his. But I think that I'm a fan of his in terms of him being a solid Warren Stevelman's like kickboxer for the division. Just a guy who's going to bring a game fight. And he's going to get an upset here and there. I'm a big fan of that. As for Artem Levin, he's trying to put himself, and this is just me saying it, but he's trying to be a prize fighter, and I'm glad that he's kickboxing, but this guy was once not just considered the best guy in the world at, you know, middleweight or 85, 86, 87 kgs around there. Not only was this guy mentioned as one of the best fighters in the weight class, the question was he the best striker on the planet? Switch stance, what I call, you know, violent place bar. Like, that's what I call that rushing style. Like, the way they can, you know, play with the spinning techniques and the way their boxing form comes together. And you see it with Artem Vakhadov. Just everything about the science of it is the highest level of beautiful that you can imagine when those hands come together. So Vakhadov, good stuff. Artem Levin, from that mold. And a guy who really took the striking to the highest level. I mean, even how he uses his spin techniques, his step knees. And when I first saw him fight, when he fought at 77 kgs, I used to call him the bully. Because it didn't matter what you did, he was going to mow you down and win with just being stronger, aggressive with knees, aggressive with offense. That's how he had success. That's how I talked about him in the beginning. Fast forward to today, and it's a completely different guy. He's not the strongest guy. He's not the biggest guy. And he turned himself into a savvy, fast hands kickboxer. And I love it. I loved everything about it. He had the fight where he got into the clinches, and he pretty much, you know, had the separation with Glory Kickboxing after the fight with Simon Marcus. And again, it was on both sides. Simon did it sometimes, but Artem Levin definitely created a lot of those clinches. So definitely it worked on both sides. The thing that I am looking forward to is, can Artem Levin get that kind of notoriety back? And there are opportunities. Joe Schilling is still out there. Joe Schilling fighting for Bellator. Joe Schilling has been disappointed in some of the opposition that he's gotten from Bellator. Like he said one time after he won a fight, he said, I didn't even look this guy up. He was like, give me my title shot already and bring in somebody who's got like a name. And he went for the money over the, you know, the notoriety of fighting for glory. And he's getting paid really good. So now the next step, of course, for him is, what can we do to build his stock? And with Artem Levin's not signed to Glory, and whoever ACB allows him to fight for whoever, I think that's a good fight. I think it's a good fight for both guys. Plus, there's a little beef there because there's a period of time where Joe Schilling said, man, you know, we're kind of friends now, so they don't really want to fight him as much, and they're 1-1 in their series. Artem won the second one, and Schilling won controversially the first one, but he scored that the controversy being the knockdown that was scored in the extra round. But good fight. I'm excited to see what happens from both guys, and I'm excited to see what their plans are moving forward for Artem Levin. But he really does have the tools to still be one of the better fighters in the world. He is that good. We'll go from there to Kentucky. It's going down. Not Kentucky. Connecticut. I don't know why I said Kentucky. We will go to, because it has the cuss sound. But no, we're going to go to Connecticut where MTGP and Lion Fight put on another show. I won't talk about the whole card. I'll talk about the fights of note. Amin Alabikri gets a victory over Nick Haynes. Amin is a guy that they've used several times. He gets a fourth round stoppage here. Really mean stoppage. Really mean work to the body. He's got some good kickboxing skill. It's just about how they build him. In the end, they need to have a guy who is so talented, a guy who not only gets to build his stock and his talent, but he also gets the high-level fight opportunity to kind of test where he is. And I think that's something that needs to happen. You know, you saw it with Gaston Bolanos. When they had him, they moved him. He was killing the first guys with spin and stuff. And then they were like, it's time for us to step it up. They brought in a Thai from Australia or something like that who was training in Australia at the time. And then it ended up being a loss for Gaston, but it was what needed to happen. You win at a certain level. You go ahead and you try yourself against a step-up fight. If it doesn't work out, you can always go back. But really good stuff. They keep building him as an athlete. They keep building him as a fighter. In that way, they need to keep doing this with Amin. Like, he's a talented guy. Keep building him. And as you've got the relationship with England, at some period of time, he's going to have to go against one of the better guys in the division. If he loses, not the end of the world. But we want to test it. Between fighting in England, fighting in Connecticut, the talent between both places, we want to test them and move them forward. That's what I mean. Steve Walker gets a victory over Oliver Fairtex, and Steve Walker 50-44 in all the cards. Steve Walker, it's just about letting him fight as much as possible. I hope that they're looking for fights for him outside of Lion Fight. I hope they don't just wait for Lion Fight to come around. Because he's got some talent. He's got some athletic tools. He's got the right kind of mean. He wants to get people out of there. The thing that he really, really, really needs, and I mean really needs, the thing that Steve Walker really needs is just the fight experience to clean up his technique. Because there are times where he'll throw it straight, and then there are times where it'll be straight in front of him, he'll still throw it wide. And there's times where he's just trying to be so violent in the spots that the shot that he might mean to throw clean might end up going wide, and then he'll get into clinches that he doesn't need to be in. He's a talented guy, so I've got no doubt that with his athleticism and with his desire to bang it out that he's going to be able to do something. He just needs more fights. More fights, more experience, and we'll see it get cleaner. I mean, he could have won by KO here if it wasn't the fact that, you know, Oliver Fairchuk shot a double leg on him to, you know, pretty much save himself from going down. We need more of him. We need more of him growing, learning, using his tools, and really growing in experience and savviness as a Muay Thai fighter. He wins a North American Super Cruiserweight title. I mean, I'm fine. I mean, I'm not sure why maybe they did it for TV. I'm not sure why they decided they needed to go into the direction of North American titles and that kind of stuff, whatever. I was fine with Flying Fight just having world titles, and then everybody else keeps working until they get there. But they decided to go with the country title, and so he won that title. Carlton Liu gets a victory over Jafar Toshev. We had 48-47, 49-46, and 50-45 on the scorecards. He is still your MTGP World Super Lightweight title holder. Carlton Liu is very, very good. I like him. I think he's a guy who they need to start grooming that next generation of who are going to be the Muay Thai fighters and the kickboxers that come right after the Liam Harrisons of the world get a little bit older. Because Liam Harrison, he started so young. I feel like I've watched this guy be at the highest level for like all of his life, because, you know, he's already fighting high level and main eventing at 18, 19, 20 years old, similar to Tyrone Spong. But, you know, at this stage, I mean, we'll call him, you know, as it goes late 20s or 30s, there have been so many fight cards that have gone by where there hasn't been an English competitor to rise up and go against him. In that way, we need that next star. I'm not saying that, you know, Carlton's a little bit, you know, smaller, but I'm saying in that way, we need that next athlete to kind of emerge and be that fighter. So Carlton Liu, good victory here. Let's see if they can build on it and have something else with it. Another North American title was on the line as Amadou Cristiano gets a victory over Eddie Abasolo. I apologize. This fight I wasn't able to see. This was not on TV. I you know, went home to watch on Access TV. This one wasn't on TV. It was streamed on Flow Combat, and the stream was not good. Everybody was complaining about it all over Twitter. So hopefully, as they return to this card, they will look at that, and maybe the product down the road will be a little bit better. But this is just me, you know, breaking down the card as I see some of the results, some of the fights I was able to see, some of the action, not all the whole card. I should be able to give you guys a good breakdown of it, but I apologize to these two athletes as I get none of their fight. Like, it just didn't, you know, didn't work. We move to Antonina Shevchenko as she gets a victory over Claire Baxter. Antonina Shevchenko, I had her in my gym not too long ago. She's so strong. The teep is there. Her clinch work is there because, I mean, what are you going to do to them? They ain't seen. They've been doing this since they were, you know, 6 years old. Her clinch game, her 3-2, her straight left, her movement. But despite this, Baxter had some moments just closing the gap, being aggressive, being strong. Two of the scores were close, 48-47. The other one wide, 50-45. Good stuff by Claire Baxter, who took this on shorter notice. I think it was like 2 weeks. So good for her. She came out, and I want to see more from her down the road. This is a really, really good outing. Hopefully, if she hasn't signed anything, I'm not sure what her official weight is, but maybe they can give her something with, like, Urena Bars or something like that. Like, they want to keep building her internationally. This is a really good start. So shout out to her. Hopefully, it leads to more success down the road, and I mean, she is a talent, so we'll see. We will see for sure what comes of it. There is a fight card that is going on as we speak. Let me see if some of the results are there. I've had this happen on the show a few times where, like, I'll be doing the podcast, and then all of a sudden the card will start. But I just have to leave this one alone. Infusion's got a card that's going on. I did not get the result of it. I'll just wait it out and just bring it up on the next podcast. My apologies there. I'll go ahead and wrap the show up with the crush card that happened last night. Those results are in. I just want to talk about the top of the card. It had, you know, I mean, they usually do a good job with their cards. A lot of decisions on this one. But the main one that I wanted to talk about was Leona Pettis gets victory over Yuma Saikyo. Pettis, solid, still in the game, or been in the game for a long time, solid victory. And then Gunapar gets a victory over Deizo Sasaki, 30-26, scored it down in the fight. Gunapar is one of my favorite Thais to watch on the international scene right now. He's very, very talented, but he's just so aggressive. He's not trying to play the Thai game of score and move. He's trying to take a life, and that's what I need to have more of. He's based in Resurrect, I believe is the name of the gym that they have, the Fairtex gym that they have in Japan. He's based out of there, and the guy just brings it. Very entertaining fighter, all action. They love him, and expect to see more of him on K1 cards. They have that relationship between K1 Crush, and it's just really cool to see him compete. So hopefully down the road we'll see more and more of these high-level kickboxers who aren't able to fight in Glory or aren't able to fight in K1, but they find something to build their resume in between time, because that's what we got to have more of. So shout-out to them, and shout-out to all the kickboxers and kickboxing events that went down. It shows the health of the sport that I could say, okay, this card was in Moscow, this card was in the Philippines, this card was in China, this card was in Connecticut, this card was in Japan. That was my show today. That's how much I'm moving around. That's how much kickboxing is doing their thing. So congrats to those athletes, winners and losers. And I will finish the show by telling everybody, go out right now. They're on YouTube. And start watching the Contender Asia series. It's the whole thing's out there on YouTube. It's just the company that made it. They don't even exist anymore. So it's like open source. So it's free. Go out there, watch it. It's all on YouTube, and I am going to do a show this week to talk about the Contender Asia. I'm really going to focus on the athletes and the buzz around it, and I'm just going to tell you the whole story from a fan perspective to a guy who then learned more about the organization later. Bring up like a top five list maybe of things that you probably didn't know about it, but it's going to be a fun one. So go out and watch the Contender Asia. I'm going to do a breakdown of that show on the next coming up podcast. So also, and I've seen it just because some of you really like kickboxing. I noticed that when I look at my Facebook streams, that I'm getting a lot of traffic and online streams and how many people are downloading from iTunes, and I get those lists. I get that gets sent to me, not to mention how many people just look at the blog site, and I'm realizing kickboxing is healthy, and I got a healthy amount of people that listen to it on a regular basis, and I'm grateful to you all. But I want to ask if anybody's interested in me doing a Patreon for people who just want more kickboxing. Right now I do this show off of when I get the opportunity to fit it in, and I'm grateful for those opportunities, and I do my best with those opportunities. And I'm always excited for what's coming up today, what's coming up tomorrow, what's going on in the sports world, like or in kickboxing. I'm always excited for it. But I get to this show when I get around to it based off of my life. If we did a Patreon for people who wanted more, I would just break down old fight cards. I talk about prospects. I talk about maybe an era of kickboxing that people aren't as familiar with, and hopefully in doing that, I have enough interest. I would just do a Patreon, and I'd be like, okay, I have to stop for this a lot amount of time because these individuals have paid for this time. So if we did a Patreon, that's what I would do. I'm still going to do my free podcast every week, but as I keep seeing more and more people do Patreons and more people ask for, hey, I would like additional content on top of what you're doing, I would definitely be willing to do that if I saw interest in the Patreon. So let me know if you're interested. And again, thank you for all my listeners, all the people who follow kickboxing, and go watch the Contender Asia. Go watch it. Watch the whole series. Enjoy it all. Watch the whole series. Watch all the fights. God bless everyone. Thanks for listening. Peace.